Hello, hello, everyone. This is your host, Akhil Jabbar, and welcome back to another episode of SaaS District. In today's episode, we'll be talking about scaling your SaaS company with zero marketing budget. Today, we have our guest, Leo Van Oosten, joining us. Leo is the founder and CEO of Amsterdam Standard. They're a technology partner who specializes in software development, IT staffing, and user interface design. And the company provides dedicated nearshore teams, UX interface design services, and agile software development for projects emphasizing agility. With over two decades of professional experience, Leo is a seasoned expert in scaling dev teams and sourcing top tech talent. So welcome, Leo. Super excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Akhil. Thank you for having me. Really honored.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your background. You've been involved in the space for quite a bit of while in different places, from, you know, founder to investor to now working with several startups all around, you know, Europe. Can you share a bit about your background, your journey from, you know, from a startup enthusiast to investing in, I believe, 16 different SaaS companies as well?
Yeah, sure. So like I said, my name is Leo. I'm 43 years old right now. I started my company already 22 years ago. I did that as a graduate student. So the first thing I did was build this company. My first company was a platform company, actually. It was one of the first ticket services here in Europe. That was a little bit too early, actually. So I learned a lot, but the people here in Europe were not ready for online payments yet. But it gave me like all the knowledge, how hard it is to start a company or how hard it is to build a platform. And back then it seemed easier and actually better to start an agency because the work was all there. My platform, my ticketing company was not generating enough income to live, and I was too lazy to find a job elsewhere. So I really wanted to make a living. So I just started the agency. And that was successful. I mean, it was really easy back then to get like good projects, and I was about to hire a lot of people. And I did that. But after a couple of years, you know, it became super boring, I would say, because as an agency owner, you really have to listen, you know, to the demands of your clients. You have to work within their budgets, and you're actually building their dreams. And I just wanted to build my own dreams. So what I did back then was just to continue the agency, but all the profit that we made, we invested that in startups because I had plenty of ideas myself. But as an agency owner, you're constantly being confronted with potential clients who actually, you know, want you to participate in their project. And so that's what I did because I loved it. I loved the thrill of all those, adventures. And I kind of learned from like the pros from the VCs back then what the strategy behind that should be. So, if you build up your small portfolio, you need to accept that probably, you know, if you participate like maybe 10 times, if you take a stake 10 times, then probably one can become a real success. And like six, seven, you know, they will go probably bankrupt or something less dramatic. And maybe two will be like very average companies. So that's what we did. And actually in all those years, I was counting them actually a couple of weeks ago. I did such adventures for like 22 times. And indeed, I think the metrics are all true, that three of them became a real big success and the other ones, they just failed, which is awesome because for me, failing is the only way that I learn. So that's basically always kept continuing the business. This agency initially started as a project agency. We just built whatever clients wanted. But 12 years ago, we pivoted into indeed the team augmentation model. So right now we focus mostly on tech companies, scale-ups, startups who want to scale and need know-how and need people, but they just don't have the resources and they don't have this know-how. So we help them there. And we do that by building dedicated teams for them. And that's what we've done. And yeah, so that's basically our business model. And what I do there personally is just, you know, help the clients with my knowledge because I failed so many times. At least 15 times I can write a book about that, how bad it can get. So that's actually, how we started Amsterdam Standard. We showed that we have this expertise. We know how to build something, but we also know, how you should actually, scale your company. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've built a great track record over these, you know, these couple of decades, these last 20 years or so. Now you, you know, also have success, but you also have failures. Say, okay, these are not going to work. Don't do it. And this is super valuable advice that people don't, you know, don't understand as much. But yeah, and what just to paint the picture for people listening in, at what stage are you typically coming in and able to really add value? Like, if I'm just starting off, do I have, you know, one customer? Do I have 10 customers? Am I at a million ARR? Like, what's a sweet spot you feel? Okay, we can come in, they've raised some capital, and like, you can make a real impact and help them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. Usually we come in when there's indeed around 10 customers. So a client builds something, they don't have the paper prototype anymore. They really have something, they invested something. And I really like to see that, you know, they really already, you know, have some stake in their own game. They, you know, they took time, they invested their money, and they built something that shows a little bit of traction. And it's, for me, it's not about the traction. It's about that they have some real user validation, that they, you know, that they really understand that there is demand for this product. That is just where we can come in. And then usually we work for clients who, you know, do not have the experience how to scale a platform. So if they do not have that on board, if there's like a team of founders where there's no technical co-founder, then it's really hard to make those next decisions. Because usually they started with hiring, let's say, one hacker or one agency that built something for them. But when it's successful, you know, you need to start thinking, how will I scale right now? And that usually, you know, the next decision that you have to make is you have to insource a team. You need to, you know, you are a tech company. So a tech company just have tech people on the payroll, right? But that's really hard. You know, what is the first step if you're like a non-technical founder? Because who will tell you if the CTO that you're about to hire is a great guy or is actually like a phony? You know, so you need to have, let's say, a real partner next to you who can help you with that. So we can help with that. You know, we help them, you know, find the great people that they need to have. And we can only become successful if they have their technical leadership in place and if they know about their own product management. So they need to have like a proper product owner or a founder who knows everything about. And then when they have that, we can help them scale. But, you know, like founders who come just with the idea, and they, you know, didn't show the commitment that they're really up for it. Yeah, that's always when I tell them, I would love to help you, you know, but first, you know, just hack it, make it, make sure that there are like a couple of users who are actually willing to, you know, use your product, not necessarily pay for it. Paying for the product can come later, but, you know, make sure that there are some users who really appreciate your product. And then I think it's time to scale or start to think about scaling. Yeah. So, you know, I help them from B to C. And I hope that they can come from A to B themselves.
Makes sense. So you've worked, you know, now you're with scaling your own company, right? Your own agency, Amsterdam Standard. You have, you know, over 100-person team, which, you know, is obviously very impressive for an agency. Can you share maybe some key strategies or maybe some of the biggest challenges you face, especially when, you know, collaborating with startups, scale-ups, different sizes, and then also thinking about maybe a constraint within their, you know, limited budget at that point, right? Where you described that, you know, 10 customers, you don't have a huge budget, right? Unless you obviously raise the round.
Yeah. Yeah. So I always tell them in any stage, you know, always make sure that you have that product market fit. And sometimes, you know, you lose your product market fit. I think that my company, after like 20 years, kind of lost the product market fit. So that's, you know, we'll talk about that later. But you know, sometimes you just lose it. Sometimes the market changed or, you know, the global economy changed. So you need to find it again. And that's also what I tell, you know, our clients. Make sure that you will scale, but only if you have that product market fit. And make sure that you're working in a niche. You know, so if you have that, then it's really easy to scale. And marketing, you actually don't need much marketing. You can become like fully product-led. But if you don't have it, you know, then you're going to burn so much money on marketing and sales, you know, you will never earn that back. So, you know, our advice is always just make sure that everything that you do is validated. So do proper user research, you know, do your market research. Don't think that you're alone. I still talk to a lot of founders who think, you know, they come up with something new. And if you just do like a short, you know, research, you see that they are not alone. So then, I mean, that doesn't mean that they cannot start this, but then make sure, you know, that you find your niche or that your story will be better, or that, you know, that you pick like a specific region where you will be successful. Yeah. So, and I think, you know, all those teams can only become extremely successful if they just start with the best possible people. So don't be cheap on that in the beginning. You can be cheap on your marketing, but make sure that you just have the best people on board who really know how to build a good product. And that's basically, you know, the same thing that we did with our company. So we are a service company and I invest in SaaS companies, but the same rules apply for our service company. You know, if we only started thinking about scaling when we knew that we really had a product that worked, and when our clients just said, this is amazing, I love it, this is like so much different than working with an agency. And only by then, you know, we knew, now we finally have a relevant product. And now we slowly start scaling it a little bit. And then we also see that we almost have like zero churn. Because, you know, this is like the most painful thing for SaaS companies, that you have like proper marketing, but that your churn is too high, you know, so it doesn't make sense. No, and that's the same thing here. So make sure that you have that product market fit, and make sure that you, you know, if you think you have it now, it can change, you know, by the end of the year, because maybe there's a new competitor, or maybe, you know, something else changed. But make sure that you keep validating that you have that. And if you don't have it, do not invest anything in marketing or sales, because you will just lose there, right? It's just like throwing away your money. Yeah.
Right. So you suggest, you know, obviously, you know, focusing really, really well, taking your time to build a great product. So, you know, once you go to market, you know, the product almost sells itself, and then you're not wasting money trying to catch up on, you know, churning clients, right? So
Yeah. And make sure that you really get ambassadors. So just do a good job. I mean, that's the same lesson apply for a service company or for a SaaS company. Do a good job, always over deliver, build up a reputation, you know, and make sure that your users will become your ambassadors, and that referral marketing is actually, you know, bringing you the most clients. And that is actually quite easy to achieve if you just focus so much, you know, on just making the best possible thing out there. That's also the most fun actually to do.
Yeah, because then it's easy, because you know, everybody loves your product, they're sharing it, they're talking about it, and you're like, okay, I've done exactly. Kind of validates the hard work you put in on your product.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking to, I'm at the stage where I've got this product, I've got market fit, I've got my MVP, a few clients now I'm ready to really scale my new startup. There's different ways about going this, right? For if you have a low budget marketing campaign, right? If I don't know what I'm doing, but I still want to scale my SaaS company, I know, like, for example, storytelling is important. Can you talk a little bit more about that, and, you know, what the perfect story is here that you're trying to put together and share with, you know, your audience, or et cetera?
Yeah, sure. I think only a couple of years ago, I realized that most of the companies out there, they just suck at storytelling. I mean, it's crazy how bad it is usually. And you have to understand that most people, they only give you a couple seconds, you know, to understand your product, understand your pitch, understand your website. They just browse through it, and like 5 seconds later, if they don't really understand it, if they do not see that thing is the solution, you know, for their problem, they're out. That's basically it. You know, if you do a pitch, if you are, you know, at a birthday of your uncle, and, you know, he asks you, what do you do? And if your pitch is vague and you're telling, I have this, you know, firm and blah, 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 and IT people, technical investment. No, like 10 seconds later, his focus drifts away. Yeah. He has no clue what you're talking about. So it's really important to have like a razor sharp pitch and to have a consistent story. Because if you tell this pitch, but your colleague or co-founder or first employee tells something different, or that you tell like a different pitch than what is on your website, it's not going to work. Now, the story has to be consistent and super simple, because people only have this very short time frame that they, you know, would love to, you know, you burn some energy on understanding if you actually have a solution for their problem. So that's it. So you really need to perfect that pitch. And in all those years, I only found one book that really helped me with doing that properly, and that is How to Build a Story Brand by Donald Miller. Mm-hmm. And I advise this one to everyone. This is just gold. This is really the Bible for, you know, for storytelling. Read that, apply their framework, And I'm 100% sure that it can improve every company out there. It's really a must read. It's simple, it's short, and it works. And you know, basically, it's super difficult to stand out of the crowd. 10 years ago, when we were building SaaS companies, you were probably alone in your space. You were the first one probably in that domain. But if you go in there right now, there's 10, 15 local competitors. And you look, you know, if you look on a worldwide scale, there's hundreds of companies probably, you know, tackling the same problem as you are doing. So make sure that your pitch is so sharp. Just invest in that. And this will just help everything. It will help your website conversion. It will make you more proud. It will, you know, you will just have a sharper pitch every time that you meet somebody out there. And they will just understand what your company does. And if, you know, they can quickly decide if this is actually something for them. So yeah, that book is like a must read.
Love it. Yeah, story branding. I think that's the term he coined, right? I think it's Donald Miller is great. And I agree. I mean, Once you have that clear positioning, clear marketing, clear messaging on your website or everywhere, and it's consistent across all, I mean, then you just start attracting the people who just resonate exactly with what you're thinking. Like, oh, this is a story that resonates with me. This is what I've been through. This is what I'm interested in. And there's no, you kind of skip the part of like trying to figure out if this is a good fit or not. And boom, it's a lot easier transaction, right?
Exactly. And it's also so much easier for your team if you have that, you know what I mean, because they are producing marketing materials all the time. And if you do not have the story brand, if you do not have the script, all the materials will be inconsistent. So, you know, if you have that thing and you always tell them, this is like the base, like always make sure that if we produce something, make sure that some of the elements, some of the sentences, some of the elements that should be in every brand are there. And, you know, that's just making their lives much easier.
Yeah. So if you're, you know, working with zero budget, which, you know, zero marketing spend, sorry, and then you're transitioning, I think you spent almost a decade where you spent almost zero, and then you started to end up allocating some of your revenue, you know, I think 10% of your revenue in 2023. And what drove your change now? Say, okay, I'm ready to spend on marketing. And then where are you investing it yourself? Or where do you think is important to spend on?
Yeah. Well, for our agency, for our team augmentation company, a year and a half ago, we were actually a little bit bigger even. We reached 150 people. And I can say that, let's say the 10 years before that, they were just so easy for companies in our space. I mean, the clients were just knocking on the door. Please, you know, give me developers, give me teams. And that actually makes you lazy as a company. So we didn't do any sales or marketing. I mean, of course, we were helpful to the people that walked in and, you know, wanted to do business with us, but we never thought about our proposition, about, you know, what are our values, what is, you know, what is out there. So we never had to do anything. And honestly, I talked to a lot of other agency owners. No one actually did. So no one was specialized. Everyone had a very generalist company. You know, no one actually picked their niche. And no one had like a compelling story. You know, the only thing that you put on your website were like the technologies and the frameworks that you were actually, you know, like helping out with. And that was basically it. But our industry was hit quite hard, actually, because of, you know, this crazy interest rate that went up like 2 years ago. Before that, money was free. So when the money was free, all the VCs, they pumped a lot of money in the market. And then, of course, you know, the war in Ukraine started, which generated the energy crisis. Then, you know, there was this global inflation and the interest went up just because, you know, to cool off this inflation. And that is a very simple principle. And I'm happy to see, you know, that inflation is pretty normal levels again. But that's what happened in the tech industry. And therefore, you know, like there's, I think a year ago, there was like 60% less investment in this whole industry, which just cooled off everything. A lot. So there were layoffs, you know, the growth was not there. And most of our clients, you know, who are in some parts relying on funding, they just had to say, okay, for the next 2 years, we will probably not grow, or we'll just shrink with, let's say, 10 or 15%. And of course, some clients got into real trouble because they saw that the next round of funding was probably not going to happen. And that is basically what just happened in our industry. So for the first time, you know, we actually got people on the bench because, you know, they were just canceled from projects. And then, you know, immediately you have to just think, you know, how will we actually get clients? And that's crazy. That's really like crazy that after all those years, and having so many people, you realize I don't even have one salesperson in my company. I don't have a marketing team. You know, we were super efficient, super lean, highly profitable, but never invested anything in that. So then, bam, you just need to make the decision. And we knew that this crisis would, you know, probably last at least 2 years. And I think it will take 2 years. I think that by, you know, the middle of this year, the interest will probably go down. The Fed will lower the interest. And then probably there will be some impulse to the VCs, you know, that they will finally spend some more money, which will just, you know, make a positive signal to our industry. But until that, it's really, you know, hard to get clients. So we had to do that. We had to think, okay, so now we go all in and now we'll just reserve 10% of our revenue. So we build a big team of 7-8 people internally. We ask 5-6 external partners to help us and just, you know, fill up the funnel with leads again and start working on them. And what we did, first we started with the storytelling. So I really wanted to make sure that if we go out there, we have a great story, because otherwise, you know, I knew we would just be burning money. And if you never thought about your story, you know, better make sure that it is great, because otherwise, you know, it's, I didn't even know how to pitch our company, right? Before that, people just came in and they said, I heard you have great teams. Can you help me? And I said, sure, you know, and here's the contract you can sign and they can start tomorrow. And now we really had to make this shift. So, you know, it starts with you know, getting the great story, doing content marketing. And I think that for B2B companies, LinkedIn really works well. So we're just connecting on LinkedIn. We're doing a lot of outreach there. And surprisingly for us, also cold email works very well. So we are sending a whole lot of emails out there with, you know, to people just, you know, asking if they want to have like a virtual coffee. And that just works. And I mean, we've also used like many other channels that didn't work. So for example, you know, Google AdWords doesn't work. Advertising on the socials doesn't work. We did a whole lot of webinars. It doesn't work. So it's really like, you know, like trying. You just need to try the channels, you know, put some effort in it, try it for like 3-4 months and just analyze, you know, is this like bringing me anything valuable? Is this growing my network? Do I get like proper leads from it? If not, then just turn it off again and make sure that you spend your dollar, you know, on the right channel. And that's what we did.
Yeah, it's the game of marketing, right? And depending on your industry, your vertical, your product, you have to keep testing, and what works for you may not work for others, right? In your case, you know, I mean, outreach and sales always work in most cases, for especially in B2B, obviously. But yeah, you know, paid ad works for some don't work for others. SEO is, you know, pretty big as well. And I think works, you know, typically well for most markets, but could get very competitive and expensive too. So,
it's crazy how expensive that got for us.
So, you know, beyond marketing, right? Like, you know, many founders are product led, maybe they have found success, like you mentioned, and then to a certain point, and then they kind of hit a ceiling, right? To where they can scale. They just don't have maybe the operational expertise. Maybe what would you be your advice to maybe founders who get there? Because you know, we get this especially now in 2024, we're getting a lot of people who've gone to this point, right? Do we raise capital? No. I'm thinking, I don't know where to do. I've done this all by myself now. Do I look for some partnership? Do I exit? Do I partner with a bigger firm? Do I find a strategic player? There's so many options. What do you tell them? What are suggestions you're saying to them to help them, you know, unlock that growth or take their business to the next level?
Yeah, well, of course, it depends a little bit in every situation. But if they reached their own, you know, maximum potential, if you see that they are, for example, stuck as a founder and you see that they can only grow when they will be on board of something bigger, you know, then, of course, you advise them to, you know, go out there in the market, you know, and try if you can be bought or buy another company. But what we first actually, you know, advise everyone is if you cannot grow yourself, then you probably know where you are lacking. Sometimes that's, you know, like the growth marketing, it's the marketing sales. Sometimes it's the finance. Sometimes it's actually the development capacity. And before you actually, you know, start, you also have to prove that that is the real problem. So we always advise just go out there, find great experts, find partners, because, you know, it's, hiring people yourself is risky, it's slow, and you can make like a mistake there. If you work with a partner, for example, you know, like a nice growth marketing agency that will help you to get the next 100 clients, just try them, you know, try them, you spend money on it, be harsh on it, show what kind of goals you're after. And then if it doesn't work after 4 months, try the next one. This is also, for example, what I did with my cold email provider. I really believed in cold emails that it could still deliver me leads. But, you know, three partners actually screwed it. So I was like kind of negative, but I was like, there must be someone out there who actually makes like smarter emails and templates and has like proper technology, maybe a better database. So only the fourth time I found a partner, you know, and that worked for me. And the same goes, for example, for development capacity. We really run into a lot of clients who have like a very negative experience with the previous partner that actually wanted to, you know, that they asked to scale their operations and it didn't work because of many reasons. And now they come to us and we kind of know how this can actually work remotely. So, you know, then it works. But it's like also there, we really feel that awesome, just come to us, give us like a few months to show that we can actually make this work for you. And then, you know, you can actually analyze, okay, so development capacity was my problem. A partner can fix it for me, which is great because, you know, then I can still grow in the next months. Maybe it is a little bit more expensive than insourcing everything, but at least, you know, I'm not standing still this moment. So I still have growth. And that actually works for like everything. Also for financing, also for if you need like fractional CFO or like, you know, like I already said, like some growth marketers, just try it. And then you are sure that that is your problem. And then start thinking about, okay, so how will I fix this problem in the long term? And if you think that, you know, if you're really looking for like a partnership or that you need to be bought or that you have already done everything, sure, you know, but probably there's always somebody out there, a professional partner that can help you. And I really believe that SaaS companies should always stay very lean and mean. So if you have like a lot of people on board, you will get slow. You will get more into like corporate culture and you cannot adapt the next day. If you work with a partner, you know, you can just say, sorry, guys, but this is not working for us. So we'll be choosing another one or we know that this channel is not working for us. And it just makes you like super agile and flexible as a SaaS company. And if you do that, then I guess, you know, you will always find the real answer. And
I like the idea, right? I mean, a lot of founders maybe get stuck on the idea, right? They're like, okay, I'm kind of stuck. I need to continue building my product, but maybe I'm having struggling with hiring, right? So I've got to build this product. I've got to deliver it. But just finding the right talents could take, you know, a month or two, sourcing them, scrubbing. You don't want to bring on the wrong person. Whereas you go to an agency, you guys have spent years kind of putting together an A-team talent who've done this experience and boom, you're off. Yeah. Might be a little bit more, but that month or two, let's say 2 months it takes to hire, you know, you're getting stuff done. Things are moving and time is money. 2 months, you could, you know, with that 2 months, you know, your runway, you have cash, you got cash to make up for and take for. So that's a great option to explore, right? Like working with the partners who already have that, who've put that together and can get you a solution, you know, a lot more instantly, right?
Yeah. And time is really money because the market is so, I mean, SaaS, the SaaS market is so competitive. You know, it's all about market share. You have to become the biggest. And if, I mean, your competition is not waiting for you. So this is really like for all of them, actually.
Yeah. So last question for you, Leo, which is about, you know, you have this system called the Solid Scaling System. And we're talking about scaling your SaaS company. Can you just maybe briefly talk about that before we shift towards the kind of more personal rapid fire questions of the show?
Yeah, sure. Well, this system is mostly about scaling your developer team. So this is my expertise. I know a lot about SaaS companies, but we specifically help them with scaling the product team, the developer teams. And we know, and from my experience, you know, I fucked it up so many times myself. It's so hard to have a remote development team somewhere else. Mostly because there is no connection. That team doesn't know what you as a founder are really after. They don't see the context. They don't see, you know, what kind of dynamics are in there in your office, you know, how it's going, what is the stress level, what you are really after. They only usually get briefed, okay, build this task, right? Build this product. And it's like, it's like the briefing is usually pretty poor. So what we really do is we build the connections. We put the people together. We get the teams to the office of the client. We make sure that they get the proper onboarding, that they go out for a dinner, that they have beers, that they laugh, you know, that they actually have that connection before they really start building. So we invest a lot of time in really understanding. We are digging into the code of the client. We're digging into their, you know, product development culture. We want to know everything before, you know, we put our people there. And then we advise them, you know, like what is the best way to build software? Maybe they have already like a proven way, but we've seen like, you know, over 100 clients in the last few years, you know, scaling their companies. So we kind of know, you know, what kind of best practices work. So that's what we first, you know, bring to the clients, all the knowledge, and we make sure that the connection is there. And then we start scaling. And that is indeed what we put in our solid scaling system. So everything to prevent that all the traditional offshoring mistakes are being made. And that kind of works. And it's not like a one-time thing, but, you know, we keep doing these things. So every 2-3 months, we put the people together. We make sure, you know, that they keep, you know, bonding, that they grow this relation. And only then, you know, we can be successful remotely. Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, you have to build the culture, the relationship, the understanding how the other person works until you get to a point now where, okay, you feel comfortable, because a lot of things could go wrong in those few months. And if you don't have a really good, you know, system to keep things on track and you know, the right things are shared and discussed, I guess then a lot of things could go wrong. So that's awesome that you guys do that. Love it. Love it, Leo. So you ready to shift and back on the personal rapid fire questions?
Sure.
Yeah.
Hit me.
Okay. That's good. So Leo, what's one activity you enjoy outside of work that gets you into a flow state?
Oh, well, probably too many, but if I can only mention one, then probably cooking.
Cooking. Love it.
Cooking. Yeah. I always wanted to become a chef, but then I ended up with an IT company. So my dream is still to sell my IT company one day and become like a famous chef.
Beautiful. Instead of code, you're, you know, coding recipes and ingredients. Yeah. Love it. What's one piece of advice you wish you had known? And if you can go back, you would tell your, you know, 23-year-old self, you know, before you started your first venture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keep focus.
Mm.
I've been all over the place, but it's really important to keep focus. That's also what I tell our clients. Don't do two things at the same time. You can only excel in one. You need all your energy to make one company or product great. Yeah.
So, from there. What are some of the biggest challenges you're currently facing in order to continue to grow, you know, Amsterdam Standard? I know you talked about a little bit, you know, the marketing challenge, but, you know, what keeps you up at night these days, if anything?
Well, we really come from a market where people are spoiled. I mean, our developers, you know, they got offers from all over the world, actually.
Yeah.
And now the market cooled off indeed. So now it's really, you know, time to motivate them again to really find and bring purpose. Purpose is often missing in many IT companies, startups, scale-ups. And purpose is really needed. I mean, we have a lot of people who are on board for like longer than 10 years. And they also ask the question, you know, why would I stay here the next 10 years? You know, what do you have in mind for me? And what can I leave to this world?
Yeah.
So that is a challenge.
Yeah. Who or what are some of the best three resources? It can be books, mentors, or people you follow in the space who you'd say have been most instrumental to your success over the last few years? I know you mentioned, you know, Donald Miller and story branding on one. And any others you can share?
Well, for my main mentor was always my father. He still is. He has always helped me with my finance. He made me financially responsible. And I really believe that, you know, proper finance is the basics for a good company. So, you know, don't make too many debts. Don't burn your money if you don't have product market fit, etc. So, like, you know, make sure you have a financial mentor. You cannot steal or borrow my father. But for me, my father was extremely important. I'm still inspired by Elon Musk, although he's completely not having focus. He's all over the place. I really like, you know, how this guy is just challenging everything and he's thinking out of the box so much. So that's a huge inspiration for me. I'm not sure if like I'm a fan of him personally, but his ideas and his companies are just, you know, like mind blowing. It's crazy how much somebody can achieve, you know, in one life.
Yeah.
And I'm actually also, I start to become a fan and I'm being inspired by Bill Gates. I follow his newsletter. I'm not sure if I'm like, I was a fan of him, you know, when he was still running Microsoft. But now, you know, with this foundation, trying to, you know, actually use his capital and all his resources to fix like real serious problems like malaria, you know, like climate change and all that. For me, it's like a huge inspiration to follow that. His newsletter is great. I'm not sure if he has a ghostwriter or he writes it himself, but those stories are very inspirational for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, Donald Miller, you already mentioned that, but you just have to read that book. Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. Amazing entrepreneurs in the world too. What does success mean to you today, Leo? Success mean to you today, whether that's personally, business, financial, life? Yes, you know, 20 years later of being in the game, what's most important to you? And you know, there's no right answer here.
I still love it when clients are with us for like many years. I thought next year I'll have one of my biggest clients who already with us for like 10 years. So that's awesome. I love that, you know, that proof and confirmation that we are still, you know, like a relevant partner for them. Mm-hmm. I also really love it when, you know, a lot of people reach their 10-year anniversary in our company this year. So the fact that we just make people happy and that we have this like safe and vibrant workspace for them, that's just the motivation every day. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I would love to have, you know, more time. So success for me is I cannot express that in money. Of course, it's great not to care too much about money, but you know, if money can buy me more time, then I guess that is very successful if I can, you know, finally choose a little bit more for myself. And of course, you know, time with my kids, that's like precious. And they're small, they're growing up quickly. So the more time I can spend with them, you know, the happier I actually am. Yeah.
Love it. Absolutely. That's the dream life, Leo. This has been great. Love what you shared. And I'm sure a lot of our audience are, you know, got a lot of good intakes from this. Where can founders or anyone listening get in touch with you, learn more about you as well as your company, Amsterdam Standard?
Yeah, so just contact me via our website, www.amsterdamstandard.com, or email me at leopold@amsterdamstandard.com, or find me on LinkedIn, Leopold van Oosten. Oosten. Hard to pronounce, but I'm easy to reach.
Okay, awesome. We'll add all three of those links, your LinkedIn, your website, and your email on our show notes as well. So if you guys want to make sure to check out, make sure to say hi to Leo. And thanks again for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was really great to be here. Fun conversation. And thanks. I'm a fan of your podcast. I was really honored to be here. Thank you so much, Akhil.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for watching this episode and joining SaaS District today. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and hit the bell for future episodes where we interview top leaders in the SaaS industry. If you're a SaaS company looking to grow and unlock the true value of your business, get in touch with us at Horizon Capital, and myself or one of our consultants will provide a free assessment to help you get there and hit your goals. If you have any feedback or suggestions for this podcast, please comment down below and help us improve our content for you all. Thanks again and see you on the next one.